podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I've even written you an introduction. I'll be honest, Sanjeev, I don't write many people introductions. Just
well, I feel privileged to, from this side of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
see, let's see how I feel after you've done it.
So on this week's show today, my castaway, actually I'm going to change it this week. I'm going to go for shopping cartaway. Very pleased with that. Listen, I could list endless things this guy has done, but I'm just going to say he's a Liverpool fan. He's a lovely, lovely man. And I'm very delighted to welcome Sanjeev Bhaskar to My Mate Bought a Toaster. What do you think of the introduction? It got the most important quality across.
Not remotely controversial, okay. Not at all. I'm thinking that you couldn't list all the things I've done because you actually have no idea what I've done.
Well, there's always this weird thing when you look at people's Wikipedia, which I did do, and it says it just, the list just goes on for ages. And I even... in my lowly status, when I've done podcasts and people go, and he's a presenter and he's done this, and you're sort of sitting there thinking, I mean, sure, I did that thing, but I mean, do you know what I mean? It already feels awkward. It was an awkward start. It sounds like the beginning of a funeral when someone lists off your achievements, like it's the end. There are no more achievements now. So listen, Sanjeev, thanks so much for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster. You have sent me a phenomenal amount of shopping history here. This is absolutely
too many?
Brilliant.
Too much?
No. It's fantastic because sometimes people send in just a couple of things, but there's loads here. And we go right back to 2010 to begin this journey into the real Sanjeev Bhaskar. This is the exclusives that we got on this podcast. This is the real person that we're finding out about today. And let's go back to the 10th of October, 2010. Okay. So 11 years ago. And there's a good flurry of comedy buying, which sets out your comedy stall very nicely, I think. You've got Sergeant Bilko.
Oh, yes.
I mean, come on, you can't go wrong. Also, one of my favorites, and I still feel there's a big gap in the market today for this, Police Squad.
Yeah.
Like, where is the good spoof? I know there was that thing on Sky that Charlie Brooker was involved in a couple of years ago that was very good. I can't remember what it was
called.
Touch of Cloth, that was it.
Yeah.
But there's still a gap for a proper good spoof, because, God, I love good spoofing.
Yeah, me too. And the interesting thing about Police Squad, as I'm sure you know, it only lasted one series. Mm-hmm. And then, disappeared. Not many people watched it. Not enough people watched it, certainly. And then reemerged as Naked Gun. And they got three successful films out of it.
Massive
films. But it started with Police Squad.
Yeah. It's quite a good lesson, isn't it, for anyone working in comedy or any kind of creative world, really, that it's a really obvious thing to say, never give up. But you kind of think, like, you'd think that Police Squad had peaked and that was that and that was done and that whole thing had died. But its biggest success was still to come. There's a big gap there where I guess it goes into probably, like, loads of meetings and people are kind of pushing it and stuff like that. And I'm always just one to think, oh, well, fuck it, that's dead. Do you know what I mean?
I do. And there's two lessons in that, actually. One's a career lesson and one's a life lesson. And the career lesson is that sometimes, you know, the idea that you've come up with, you have to believe in it. Mm. That's the priority. But also, sometimes for your idea, its time has not come. Mm. And, you know, that script that you've written or that idea that you've written that you've stuck in a drawer and you've gone, that's it. It may just be that, you know, some years later, the time for it is right.
Yes.
So it's never dead. And yes, that's the career lesson. The life lesson thing is that you have no idea. We have no idea what the future holds for us. And generally not knowing is seen to be a frightening place to be. Mm. You know, we kind of think the worst. You know, we think of this black void, which is the future.
Yes.
In which, you know, terrible things can lead to, yes, awfulness.
This is becoming therapy. Now we're into therapy territory, because this is where I am right now. Just like, career-wise, just thinking, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
But it can play into the most kind of extraordinary and positive experiences. You just have to be open to them. Mm. And I think that, you know, feeling kind of fearful about the future, not cautious, which is slightly different, but feeling fearful about the future actually closes you to all that positive stuff that's going to come your way that you just don't spot.
Yes.
Because your fears have subconsciously kind of blind spotted you.
Yes.
And my own life is a kind of an example of that, is an illustration of that, in that, you know, I dreamed of kind of working in film and television and theatre and all that stuff when I was 14 or 15. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to do it until I was 33
or 34. Right? Is that when so you started doing...
You know, up until...
How old were you when you did Goodness Gracious Me then?
I was about 33, 34, something like that.
I didn't know that. Right, okay.
And it was just that, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's great kind of slices of luck in my personal story, but in terms of getting to this. But at 32 or 31, it seemed as impossible as it did at 15.
Oh, really?
So it kind of, it changed very, very quickly within 2 years. But the fact is that it did change. So I'm kind of absolutely aware, from experience that unknown future can be something glorious.
Mm.
And so it's that thing of not defining yourself by your present day fear or woes or, you know, anxieties or whatever. That's not who you are. And that's not necessarily who you're going to be.
So true. So true. And often all the people, in fact, a lot of the people I like most have had that slightly later rise to fame. So there's you, Frank Skinner is a good example, Ricky Gervais, these guys all, it just happened in the 30s, and kind of well into the 30s when it clicked in. I wonder if that affects the kind of direction their comedy goes in as well.
I think it probably does, in that you come into it with some life experience.
Mm.
And so what you want to say, I think, changes. And also I think that, you know, for me, I think had I achieved any kind of success at 21, I think it might have just gone to my head. You know, it would have just been, you know, you start chasing the things that society tells you should chase.
Yes.
And for me at 33, I just wanted a long career. That was it. I wasn't interested in any of the trappings of kind of whatever those words like, you know, lead or star or, you know, any of those celebrity, all those kind of things meant.
Mm.
I just thought, gosh, if I can make a living out of this, and just pay the rent, that would be just the most amazing thing.
It's just the most basic unit of all this, isn't it? If I'm somehow, I still feel like that first gig I ever did when I got £5 from the Amused Moose in 2001. 2013, 10th of November. Now, you've got some diabetic raspberry jam and some, is it stevia or stevia? I always get this wrong. Stevia?
I've called it stevia. Well, it may be stevia.
For the purposes of today's podcast, welcome to stevia. A light bar selection. So this is a kind of sugar-free, very sweet plant extract that doesn't have sugar in. So is this diabetes, or is this you trying to reduce your sugar intake?
Well, it's interesting that you picked that up out because it's actually a celebrity story. At that time, I was going to see somebody, you know, who was a poster on my wall when I was 14 or 15, part of that impossible world.
Mm.
And it was somebody that I then had become friends with. So had stepped off my teenage wall and stepped into my life.
So weird.
And was a really good friend. And that was Sir Roger Moore.
Oh, man.
And
oh, come on.
So
how did this happen? How does one become pals with a Bond? With I would argue, still the best Bond. Certainly my Bond.
Yes, and mine, you know, and the right one for his time. Well, you have to have a plan for world domination.
Sure, okay.
You have to start to execute it, domination. And then he comes in to save the world. And then, you know, it's the bit that they never show in the Bond films afterwards is Bond and Blofeld kind of just hanging out afterwards and
some sugar-free jam.
Going, well, you know, have you been rethinking your thoughts? Have you had time to ponder? Yes, I have. Yes. It's not very good what I did. Series called The Kumars that I used to do.
Yeah.
Roger Moore was a big hero of mine since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And so I got in touch to find out whether he'd come on the show. And he politely refused at the time, but sent me a really lovely email, a personal email, which he didn't have to do.
Yeah.
And we then started corresponding and then kind of hit it off and then stayed in touch. So at that point, he was coming over to do these kind of evening with audience with Roger Moore shows.
Right. So he's living in LA at this stage. So he's Mr. LA.
He's living in the south of France.
Oh, I see. Oh, wow. Okay.
In Monaco.
Right. Yes.
As I said, when he first said, I said, oh, where do you live nowadays? And he said, I live in Monaco. And I said, well, that's nice. And he said, well, somebody has to.
By the way, listeners, for the purposes of people who can't see this, Sanjeev is doing the eyebrows as he goes into Roger Moore. Can I just say, look, I spent years, because of Roger Moore, I spent years in front of the bathroom as a kid working out how to do this. And that is my...
Oh, well, listen, you can do both individual eyebrows separately going up and down.
Can't do the bloody voice.
Just have to go a bit deep. That's it. All you have to do is go deep. So he was coming over and I kind of said, oh, let's meet for dinner and stuff like that. And he said, actually, you know, I've been told that I have to go light on sugar.
Yes.
Because I may be kind of borderline diabetic. And I said, no problem. And so I just basically found a bunch of stuff that was diabetic friendly and sugar free and put it in a bag and I gave it to him when I saw him.
That's just brilliant. What a delight.
It was specifically for him.
What a delight that is, you're going through your Amazon shopping history. You're like, oh yeah, oh look at that. That's the time I bought Roger Moore a load of sugar-free raspberry jam. Brilliant. Right there. Hanging out with the Bond. And did you eventually get him on the show?
No, because
so you just became pals
with him? Yeah. We just kind of, he had a very funny a joke sort of, email list that I was on where he would send me utterly inappropriate jokes that could never be repeated again, but were hilarious.
He's one of those uncles. I've got an uncle like that. Always, thanks, Uncle George. Yeah, well done. Very good. That's what Roger Moore did. I love it.
So he would send me those jokes and stuff, and then I would text him or he would text me. And then, you know, on the rare occasions he was over here, we would meet up. And he was absolutely glorious. I mean, really funny, very funny,
yes.
Incredibly generous and charming and warm. And I remember his son saying to me that his dad could remember everyone who was on the crew of anything he'd worked on.
That's ridiculous because those crews are huge.
Yeah.
Oh,
they're massive. And he'd always make time for them. And if they came to a show or something, you know, he'd say, yes, of course, I remember you on this, that and the other.
Yeah.
He was really a really, really lovely man. Really
such
lovely man.
Dude. Well, there you are. There's another life lesson on the show today. If you want one of your heroes to jump off your bedroom wall and appear in real life, you need to buy some diabetic raspberry jam.
Make sure that they, you know, they're diabetic in the first place. Otherwise, that's just like some sort of weird sub-mafiosi message.
I'm coming for your pancreas. Yeah. 2014, Sanjeev Bhaskar here on My Mate Bought a Toaster. What have we got as we get towards... Let's go back to the beginning of 2014. There's a bit of football, some match attacks, trading cards. Oh, I'm into these now. And when I say I'm into these, my son ostensibly is into them, but I sort of like it more than him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, my son, who's now 15, so he was 2000... When was this? 2014.
So this is 2014. So, yes, seven years ago, yeah.
He was nine-ish at that point.
That's it.
He was really passionate about football really early on. So from sort of three, we used to take him to a thing called Little Kickers and then he played for various teams and stuff like that. But he was really, really into football. And actually when he was really, when he was about three, it would almost be a party trick where, you know, we'd have friends over and this, you know, toddler would be walking through the room and, because the top trump cards were the first things he encountered that had, you know, footballers on them.
Yeah.
And I would just stop and say, hey, when was Sir Stanley Matthews born again? And he would go 1908 or whatever it was and walk off. So the match attacks were the thing, you know, the big collecting thing that all the kids were doing.
Yes. But boys like that. Boys like the thing. And I'm sorry, that's obviously, I don't want to over-gender this, but in my experience, my kids are the same, certainly my eldest. He likes the match attacks and the top trumps because it is putting things into sort of mathematical facts and it's organising the crazy world of football. And he really... really likes that. He likes having knowledge as well. I wonder if that's a thing, so they can have conversation. He really enjoys that part of it.
I think you're right. I think, but also they're competitive. So that whole thing with, top trumps obviously is a game, but with match attacks, it was who have you got, what's the speed, what's the rating, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And obviously when you buy Match Attacks, you know, you don't know what players you're going to get. You don't know. There are sort of graded cards within it as well. So there are silver cards and gold cards.
And you know that a pack of Match Attacks costs about the same as a Premier League striker as well. That's the important thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So you know.
Well, you end up spending about the same.
You really do.
So he was really, really into those. So, and then the thing was, because he kind of inherited being a Liverpool fan.
Yes.
From me.
Good.
We had to, you know, you had to keep buying them until you'd got, you know, the team.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? That's exactly what we did as well. That final, when you get that last player, and it's usually someone deep on the bench, and you're like, finally, there you go, you've got him. You've got him, we're safe. We can stop doing this now. And we can see the Liverpool thing here as well on the 12th of February 2014, two days before Valentine's Day, so I assume this is for someone you love. The official football team-focused gym bag, a Liverpool gym bag. That's a lovely thing, Sanjeev. That's a lovely thing.
Yeah, the missus wasn't, you know, best pleased with it. But once again, the kid was kind of, you know, we had Liverpool towel, I think Liverpool towel he got as a present. And then, you know, it was that. So I remember my uncle was quite a heavy smoker when I was a kid. And so, you know, every birthday and Christmas, he got an ashtray. I mean, we just couldn't think of anything else. You know, he could have opened up an ashtray emporium of some kind. And it was the same with my son. It was kind of like anything Liverpool related, kind of clock or, you know, pillowcase or kits, obviously. You know, they were the easy buy for him, really.
It just solves the problem. Like only yesterday we were in Sports Direct and we bought my eldest some Liverpool pyjamas. It's just easy.
There you go.
It's just done.
I mean, I would have been very happy. I mean, nobody ever bought me anything like that. I would have been, you know, I'll put that out there now. Anyone wants to buy me anything kind of Liverpool related. I've got a Liverpool kind of, what have I got? Personally,
yeah,
I've got a Liverpool top.
Yeah, but when do you wear it? Do you wear it out, or is it like at home watching the match kind of vibes?
It's kind of both, actually, but definitely kind of at home.
Yeah,
when we're watching a game, because my son will put his on.
Excellent,
and that's kind of a fun thing to do. But I've got a Liverpool pint glass as well.
Oh, nice, nice.
Which also gets utilised when the games are on.
And do you update the strip every year?
Not for the last year. But the new kit's just come out, so I'm just awaiting what the pressure is going to be. Yeah. I mean, you know, my son's 15 now, so he's a little more circumspect.
Right.
But through those kind of like, you know, 6 to 12 years, we had to get the kit every year.
Yeah. So kids are so expensive. They're lovely, though. Kids are lovely generally, but they're expensive for things.
You see, now I'm thinking of kids in terms of, you know, transfers. And I'm thinking, is there a net spend?
Yeah,
that's what you're hoping for, and you're hoping there's a net spend at the end of it.
It's going to cost you, yes.
That you're in the positive somehow.
But it's fine, you came top of the league of parenting, don't worry about it. All right, look, here in April 2014, The Beatles, All These Years, Volume 1, Tune In, 2014 this is. Fan of The Beatles, are we?
I've got that here, actually. It's just below shot on our Zoom.
Yeah.
So this is a book by... I'm going to kind of try to get it out now.
Don't do yourself a mischief. Oh, it's a big book as well.
It's huge. Well, I bought the super-duper extended version. There's the box there came in. And you might be able to see from that what just... massive tomes.
Oh, wow.
These are. So they're written by Mark Lewisohn, who basically sort of researched the Beatles to the nth degree. So these two books, these huge volumes, and I bought the extended versions, there are shorter ones, take the Beatles story from their ancestors up to about 1962.
Right.
Okay. So he's been working on the next volume. They take about a decade to write.
Oh my God.
But the detail in them is phenomenal. And what was really interesting about the books, for me as a huge Beatles fan anyway, was the degree of social history.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, the stories about, the Four and, you know, Pete Best and Stu Sutcliffe and other people who were involved in the Beatles early on.
Mm.
But also you get this kind of social history of Liverpool as they were growing up and Britain and then the world as they were growing up.
Yeah.
And that I found really fascinating. So the degree of detail within it, the way it was written, and the fact that you had this kind of sort of British history alongside these kids who were yet to make history were absolutely fascinating. In fact... the reason I became, you know, having been born in sort of just west of London, that I became a Liverpool fan was partly down to the Beatles. in that I was about 6 years old, and a kid at school said, you know, do you like football? And I said, yes. And he said, well, you support Chelsea. And I said, well, how do you know I support Chelsea? And he said, you have to, because we all support Chelsea. So I thought, well, obviously that's the one team now I'm not going to support. And I was desperately thinking of who I could say. And I remember thinking, I know the Beatles come from Liverpool and I like the colour red. So I said, Liverpool. And then you just stuck with your team.
And that's it. So it wasn't a family thing for you then? It just happened one day?
No, my dad had scant interest in football. I mean, he was one of those people who would watch the World Cup final and watch the FA Cup final because they were events.
Yes.
But then watching, you know, any football with him was just irritating because he would just go, you know, give them a corner. You're going to go, they're not anywhere near a corner. They can't. That was a penalty. It's not a penalty, Dad. It's a throw-in. There's a difference. Why are you throwing the ball? Because it's a throw-in. It was really, I mean, every time someone got a penalty, he'd go, well, that's a goal. No, it's not a goal. Yeah, it's usually a goal.
There's a man in the goal.
It's usually a goal.
He's going to stop it. God's sake.
It was really frustrating. No interest in the family at all.
That's really interesting. That, by the way, that contrarian thing, I wonder if there's a comedians or at least a kind of performer writer thing going on there as well, because I was the same. That was my version of Britpop. When I was growing up in the 90s, everyone was like, you've got to like Oasis or Blur. Well, I don't think I will, thanks. I'm going to like Manson instead. Thanks very much. And I was the only person in the whole year. Everyone else was. Do you know what I mean, though? That kind of, I'm not going to do what you pricks are doing. It's a weird thing. I don't know. I've always been.
But did that then kind of lead to, you know, a kind of silent or otherwise respect for this kind of individual, this loner? Or did you just become a pariah?
Pariah, mate. Absolute pariah. Yeah. Don't. Totally proud. But weirdly, I wore it quite well, considering I was desperate to be liked.
Hmm.
And yet I was like, no, I refuse to like the thing that everyone else likes. It's really.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because again, I, as a kid, I was a real people pleaser.
Yes.
And it's really, I've not really thought about why one then takes a stand. But it's an interesting thing.
Because you were told what to do by that kid who went, you are a Chelsea fan. You were told what to do.
Yeah. And I think also probably by someone that I fundamentally then didn't respect in some way. If it was someone I looked up to, it may have been different.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, if someone had just come up and said, do you like football? Said, yeah. Oh, that's great. Why don't you come and hang out with us? Have you ever watched Chelsea play? They've got some good players. And they go, yeah, they have. Yeah. Well, come over and hang out with us. Mm. Have some milkshake and some biscuits. Mm. Let's talk about. And I may well have kind of then gone, yeah, all right, I'll hang around with you, Chelsea boys. Mm.
You listen to the Chelsea fans, just up the charm a bit. I once fell into Chelsea Twitter after I may have gone on Twitter and got a bit overexcited after Liverpool beat them. And my God, I've never had so many strips torn off me. Chelsea Twitter is I wonder which is the worst. I've had a bit of problem with Tottenham Twitter as well, but Chelsea, in my limited experience, is but both admirable in its hatred of everyone else. It was remarkable.
Well, that, I mean, and therein lies the beauty of Twitter. Mm. That I took my son to, we were invited, no, I took my son to Stamford Bridge when in Gerrard's last season, when he scored.
Oh, yes.
When Mourinho kind of said this kind of, you know, this fantastic adversary or whatever it was that term he used.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether I'd get some hassle from the Chelsea fans there.
Yeah.
All I said to my son was, I said, look, we're guests here. So if Liverpool do score, sit on your hands. Sit on your hands.
Yeah.
And Gerrard scored. And so we, oh my goodness, it was self-control, diabolical. But I actually have to say the Chelsea fans there were actually very nice.
Of course.
And
of
very
course.
Pleasant.
Yeah.
And, and you know, as you get older, you kind of, you know, you end up having friends who support lots of different teams, and you genuinely have that friendly banter.
Yeah, it would be nice if we can keep
not on Twitter,
but it'd be nice if we can keep sport sort of pre 2016 in terms of the culture wars. Let's just keep sport away from that, please.
Yes,
everything else would be so. I'm really glad you balanced my Chelsea complaining there. Thanks for doing that. Also, we should say the Beatles connection as well. One other thing, of course, you ended up in Yesterday.
I did.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, again, for a Beatles fan, I mean, it was just glorious, but. But also for a fan of every kind of creative element, you know, Danny Boyle directing, Richard Curtis writing, and, you know, the actors, Ed Sheeran, who I think is brilliant.
Yes.
Was in it. It was a fantastic experience, actually. And also to go back to the Beatles, I, you know, part of that weird journey of being you know, not specifically 15, but being young and dreaming about this world and then having interaction with it, that unknown future, is that I kind of ended up meeting three of the Beatles. And I still can't quite believe that when I say it out loud.
Was it part of the film? Or?
No. I kind of just in the kind of weird walks of life.
Yeah.
I met Ringo Starr at a party. George Harrison at the Royal Festival Hall, where he'd come to see something.
Please say Paul McCartney in a Starbucks. Come on, please.
If only. It would be kind of just Paul McCartney in a KFC.
Yes. Oh, yeah,
it would be the...
And
Paul, I've met at a few things, actually. And again, because this world is so kind of interconnected at the point, that 6 degrees of separation thing is relatively easy after a while.
Yeah.
But I think it was something at the Royal Academy of Art, something. There was some opening there that I'd been invited to, and he was there, and I kind of went over and chatted to him.
What the hell do you say to a Beatle? You can't sort of sidle up and say, you know, Let It Be. Absolutely cracking shit. Do you know what I mean? You just turn into Partridge. And I've had this a few times, meeting, you know, people who I really admire and respect, yourself included, and you get up in your head a bit. You can't be natural when you're meeting these people. What do you do when you're chatting, when you're having small talk with McCartney?
Well, to be quite honest, Tom, I mean, you know, I've got a theory about this because I've experienced it, I guess, is that if you meet people that you admired as a kid, if you're lucky enough to meet them, it's the kid that responds. You know, so yes. Someone that I admired kind of as an adult. So I met Martin Scorsese once and I was really excited about meeting him and had a little chat with him. But it was the adult me that appreciated his work and, you know, he knew why I kind of loved his films that was talking to Martin Scorsese. Mm-hmm. But with Paul McCartney or Roger Moore, it was the, you know, it was the 12-year-old or the 15-year-old that was just kind of leaping up and down inside. And on the outside, obviously, you're doing the swan thing of trying to remain dignified in some fashion. I said to Paul, I'm an actor and a writer, and I used to do a series called The Kumars, and it was a kind of sitcom chat show. I got that far, and he went, "I know." And I said, "Well, Paul," I said, "look, you stand on stage and you kind of say, well, I used to be part of a little band called The Beatles." And I said, there's kind of 30,000 of us going, "We know." At which point he laughed. So that was good. So good. Yeah, I've met him a few times actually, and he's terrific. So, it was, I don't know where I was going with that.
I like the advice of what happens when you meet your heroes. I like that. It's the childhood you who meets them. I think that's good. And I'll bear that in mind as and when I meet Jason Donovan, because that's the big one for me. Yeah. I can't even think about it. I'll get too emotional.
I think you're allowed to then kind of, you know, do the kid thing, scream, put an ice cream in his face and piss yourself.
Official permission granted from Sanjeev Bhaskar. I'll explain that. I'm standing in my wet pants. Sanjeev said this was fine.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plot like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast app. Apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
Oh, I tell you, where's a joyous place to be? At your house on the 8th of October 2016, when the Marie Brizard banana liqueur and chocolate cream liqueur. Mwah, mwah, yes, chocolate cream liqueur. Oh, it's like posh Baileys. Look at this. 70 whatever that is, litres. No, not 70 litres. Bloody hell.
70 litres. Yes, we had to fill up. We've got these big vats in the garden of booze that we have to top up now and again.
Heard about your gaff.
70 litres.
Fill the hot tub with chocolate cream liqueur. We're having one of our parties. I tell you what, though. Oh, I love a chocolate cream and a banana liqueur as well. Ooh.
Well, I'll tell you where that came from, actually, because I now remember why.
Which
I
Bond
bought.
Were you having over now? This is Pierce Brosnan coming over, isn't it? Unbelievable.
He's partial to a bit of banana liqueur. Nobody, not many people know that. I had just I'd done some promo stuff in South Africa. So the series called Unforgotten that I do was being shown in South Africa.
The best TV show ever. We will talk about Unforgotten because Sanjeev, it's the best. It's the best. It's the best.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, not that I'm not taking credit for it, but because I can't. But so I'd come back from there, and in South Africa, someone had given me a cocktail in Johannesburg called a Soweto toilet, and it was basically a sort of banana liqueur with a sort of Baileys-y type kind of thing, and a couple of drops of chocolate liqueur, which basically looked like floating shit. I mean, that was the whole Soweto toilet thing. I mean, you know, it was obviously the most unappealing name of any cocktail that I've ever had.
That's brilliant.
But it tasted amazing.
Imagine just sitting down on a blind date, Sex on the Beach. It's Cosmopolitan, no thanks. I'll have a Soweto toilet. Thank you. Thank you.
That's
four
that's
logs.
What it was
Cheers.
And I came back and I never quite managed to perfect the floating turd effect of, which I'm kind of glad about, to be quite honest now.
I just love the image of you opening the front door. Darling, what have you hoarded? Oh, I'm going to make. So, here's this thing. Can we, that's nice. That's brought up Unforgotten though, which I did want to talk to you about because I think it's such a great show. And I've been lucky enough to work with Nicola Walker as well. I think she's an absolute genius. I think you're a genius. I think Chris Lang, who writes it, is a genius. Interesting thing I want to talk about is how it's a bit of a, it was an odd turn for your career, right? It's quite, this is a sort of noir-ish ITV crime drama that rightly has built a following. It was, when it started, everyone went, this is amazing, but it's really caught on in the last year or so. People have clocked it. And I'm very, it's very important that I tell you I was there from the start, okay? It's very important that you know that. But an interesting turn for you to take this kind of very deadpan, low-key, lot of information in those lines. You know, there's a lot, it's a whole different thing to doing comedy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It was an interesting thing that, I mean, when I was asked to audition for it, they sent me the first three scripts of the six. Mm. And I started reading it and I just thought, this is brilliant. I mean, I would watch this.
Yes.
You know, it was a real page turner. And and I said to my agent, look, I'll go down for the audition, of course. Obviously, I'm not going to get it, but it'll be great if Chris Lang is there and I can tell him in person just how amazing I thought his scripts were.
Yeah.
And there was Chris, there was the casting director, Victor, and Andy, the director, who were at the audition. And I went in and I did the lines that they'd asked me to prepare. And I basically said, look, at the end of it, they said, thank you very much. And I said, look, I really just came down here. I may not see you again.
Time for the speech. I do that. If there's ever an amazing thing, you've just got to know. Yeah.
I just wanted to tell you in person how amazing this script is. And I really can't wait to see it. And, you know, congratulations. And then left. And I think it was 2 days later, it was fairly quick. My agent rang up and said, yeah, you've got it. And I was kind of, really? And it took me till the second series to have the confidence to ask Chris Lang why he'd cast me. Because I just thought, what are they thinking? Have they seen what I've done before? So it was the second series that I said to Chris, I said, look, I've got to ask you now that I can't be written out.
Yeah.
The second series.
I'm locked in,
Why you cast me? And he said, look, I just thought if someone can apply comedy timing to drama, he said, then as a writer or a producer or whatever, you've then got the lot. Mm. It means that you can drop something into their lap, which is dramatic or comic or that place in between. And initially I thought, actually, I'm not approaching this in any way different to I would a comedy character. It's a character and either serious stuff happens to them or, you know, comedy shit happens to them.
Yeah.
But actually, the more I started to think about it and try to explain it to people, the more I kind of realized just how hard comedy is. And, you know, the example I always give is that, you know, with comedy, the funny in the line, it may be a pause. Mm-hmm. The pause may be the thing that makes that line kind of, you know, zing. And if that pause is, you know, half a second too long,
yeah,
it's not funny. half a second too short, it's not funny. There is a sweet spot of that pause. And then it equally applies to a word or a line. You know, you hit the word too hard, not very funny. Yeah. Not hard enough, not very funny. There's kind of, so it becomes much more technical than drama.
Yeah.
And also with comedy, you're looking for a really specific response, which you're not with drama. You know, if people had to wail to an emotional scene in drama, and that was the demand, it may be similar, but getting a laugh is really specific, and so comedy is much harder in that sense. And I think it is.
So what you're saying is Unforgotten's easy.
Honestly, it really is. It's so simple. When you've got good writing, actually, and you've got all these other really good actors in it, it's really easy to kind of, you know, just copy them.
It is absolutely brilliant. It's so brilliantly written. And is it, who's the director? Andy
Wilson.
Andy Wilson. He's a fabulous director as well, isn't he?
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, great in terms of direction. He started out as a performer, so he can speak an actor's language.
Mm.
And a lot of
Listen, Love, that's the actor's language, right?
Yeah, that's it.
It's nearly lunch, okay? So one more push and you can have a nap. Something like that.
One more push. Yes, you can imagine Shakespeare saying that, can't you?
Yeah, totally.
Right, Hamlet, love. Yes, let's give it one more push.
Yeah.
For that, you know, to be or not to, just give it one more, give it another go. Try something different with it this time. Throw it away.
Throw it away. That's the classic. Just throw it away. What does that mean? The worst note I've ever had, Sanjeev, was, can you just stop gurning? Just stop doing that.
Patreon.com/toasterpod.
17th of March 2017. This is a very peculiar thing that you've bought here. Maybe you're handing this to Andy, the director of Unforgotten, just to try and make him give you some more aggressive notes. You bought the Ad Astra megaphone with folding handle and siren function. Why have you got a megaphone, Sanjeev?
I honestly can't remember now. I wonder if it was my son doing something.
Okay.
It may be. I haven't seen it for some time.
Other things bought with it. Bought at the same time as an Airwick VIPoo 55 milliliter lemon idle spray. So that's.
Those two do sound connected, don't they? You want to pick up the megaphone just to go, occupied!
Give it 15 minutes!
I don't get any closer! I wouldn't go in there if I were you. Wait till the professionals get here.
It's a legit experiment. What is a more effective way of giving someone a pleasant toilet experience? Keeping them away with a megaphone or spraying, you know, nice scents?
I think I got both ends covered, if that's not too weird an image.
Clearly. All right, good. What else have we got here? Some cat food. I assume you may have a cat. That's making me think you might have a cat.
No.
Okay.
No, we don't.
It's just like catching neighbours' cats. The Go Hiking automatic pet feeder as well, $64.99. So you can really, really neglect your cats. That's good to see. That's lovely.
It's for my mother-in-law, obviously.
Really nice. How often do you eat these days? Three. Oh, it hasn't got three times a day on it. Oh, for God's sake. Fine, we'll get you Meals on Wheels. 29th of November 2018. Oh, you've gone for the Dyson hot and cold fan. £469 you spent on this fan. Does it work? A few of my friends have got them, but they're always a bit on the fence about it.
Yes, it does. Obviously, this was, you know, in the days when Dyson was kind of cool as an individual. Hot and cool, obviously, with that particular product. Yeah, it was really good. I'd been filming, I think it actually was Unforgotten. It was the second series of Unforgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Third series.
It might be the third because you bought the second series of Unforgotten that year. So yeah,
you're right. Yeah, I couldn't have. And then I was in it. The third series of Unforgotten. And we were kind of on location somewhere. And the hotel room had it. And it was fantastic in terms of warming the room up really quickly. It was the opening scenes of the series three, which was A Body Under a Motorway.
Oh, yes,
and we were filming
that.
From the first Beast from the East. So it was -7 when we were doing those scenes. And in the hotel, you know, we were absolutely freezing, got back to the hotel. And this Dyson hot and cold thing heated up the room spectacularly. And I kind of left it on for some time, and then the room was too hot. And so I then kind of utilized the cool function. And it was pretty good.
Great use of energy. The electricity bill, that hotel has since gone under. Yeah, right. Hot, thank God, hot, thank God. Night shoots. That must have been a night shoot if you were doing that at the beginning of that series. The night shoots are horrible for that series.
It was, yeah. It was. I think it was March-ish.
Beast from the East was March. Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's right.
And so it was utterly freezing. And in those opening scenes, it's meant to be not as cold as that. And we, Nicola and I, were so cold that you couldn't feel your face move. So you were wrapped up in coats and you were holding hot water bottles. And then, they say, right, okay, number one's ready. Everybody, we're going to get, and people take away all that lovely warm stuff.
Yeah.
And then your teeth are literally doing that. And they go, action. And you go, yeah, the body's over here. I think you'll find that. And every time they shouted cut, Nicola and I would run to the nearest car just to jump in the back.
Even if it wasn't a car from the production, just a random passing car.
Sorry, a moving car was more kind of challenging.
Nicola Walker in the back of my car. Yeah, she's very cold. She's very cold. It's a good vision of your future as well for you to have that sort of frozen face thing. That's the Botox, which is inevitable in your career path, of course. Just to know exactly what that's going to feel like. It must be weird when actors do that, when they get the full sort of forehead Botox to be giving these sort of facial expressions and just nothing to happen. So weird.
I remember asking someone once who knew Joan Rivers.
Oh yes.
And I kind of said to this person, I can't remember who it was now, but I said, look, you know Joan Rivers. And I said, she has made her career on observational comedy.
Yeah.
And, she's had so much work done. What does she see when she looks in the mirror? And he said, she sees a much younger woman looking back. So that whole thing about, body dysmorphia, in terms of how you think you look, how you want to look, and then eventually how you do look, I think it's utterly distorted by your own view.
Yeah.
So that thing with the Botox thing, I just assume that people who've had it are so focused on that little bit, whether it's the forehead or whatever it is, that they just go, well, those lines aren't there anymore, so this is great.
So I'm happy. You look younger. The lines are gone. They ignore everything else. Yeah. That's fair enough. 26th of March 2019. This is quite an intimate product that you bought here. It's always awkward when someone buys a product that involves invading their own body, but it's one I want to talk about because genuinely I think I need it. The earwax remover. It's an electric earwax remover. So basically you're brushing your teeth, but you're getting into it. Because I get, sorry for this over sharing of information, dear listener, but I get a lot of earwax because my job, I've always got these cans on, I've always got these headphones on, and I get loads of earwax. Does this work?
I now can't remember. It's either the earwax thing is, as you say, it's an odd one. And also I think one of the times where, this was really early on, goodness gracious me time, where, you get recognized at a place that you don't want to. And actually, having now just said that out loud and thinking of all the possibilities that could be for anyone,
yes.
I got away quite lightly. But it was, I was in a, huge Tesco's in their pharmacy bit, and my ears were blocked. And,
which is the worst feeling in the world. It's awful when that happens.
Horrible.
I hate it.
Horrible.
Hate it. Yeah.
And so it was a very long queue, and I got to the front, and obviously you try to kind of, counter what your voice is doing. So you're aware that, when your ears are blocked, you may speak loudly.
Yeah.
So you try to kind of counteract that by speaking slightly more softly, which you think is normal voice. But with the other person just going, I'm sorry. And in the end, I was going, got anything for the earwax? And everyone, when I looked round, were waving
it's him.
At me.
It's him.
It was hugely embarrassing. But as I said, now I'm thinking about, embarrassing places you've been caught. And I'm thinking, that's nothing.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's nothing. There's plenty of examples out there of other people.
Yeah. Providing there's no massage parlor involved in this story, you're absolutely fine. Don't worry about it.
It was a pharmacy inside a massage parlor.
Well, that could work.
Sticking to that.
Well, they probably need one or two. All right, let's have a very quick look at 2020 before the end of today's episode. Of course, lockdown-tastic. Let's see what Sanjeev Bhaskar was up to. He's been very, very busy. On the 12th of August, the Energetic Sky Fruit Picker, a 13-foot lightweight telescoping aluminium alloy pole with bruise-free basket for apple pear peach harvesting. Wow, that is a specific product.
It's very specific, isn't it? and along with having no cat, we've got no fruit trees. So there you go. We've got one glorious apple tree in a very small garden. And it's kind of long and thin. You know, people think of, I think of apple trees as these things that grow out.
Yes.
You know, that look very much like a kind of, an oak tree or something. Mm-hmm. And these are quite slim, this tree that we've got. But the apples are phenomenal. They're red apples and they're really juicy.
Cooking or just standard, just fun, leisure apples or cooking?
Leisure. Leisure apples? I've never heard that. No, I've literally just
coined it. You've got to use that forever. A leisure apple.
Are they for professional purposes or leisure?
Exactly. Sir. It works. It bloody works.
Leisure apples.
I've got a leisure apple. I'm sticking with that.
To go with your leisure wear.
The more you do that face, the more I'm digging my heels in. I'm going to call them leisure apples from now on.
Quite right. Carry on supporting the team you
want
to
support. There you go.
So, yeah, it's a long, thin one. And so for years, I've never been able to reach, with ladders and all the rest of it, the apples at the very top. Oh, my God. And there's probably, I don't know, fruit trees are extraordinary, aren't they? That sounds like a weird, grandiose statement. But the fact that, you know, they produced quite enormous amounts of fruit.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of them, you know, fall on the ground or, you know, birds peck at them or insects get to them. But it's an enormous amount of fruit.
This is a real Londoner finding out about crops live on the show today.
Yes, crops. I mean, did you know things actually grow and we eat them? Isn't that extraordinary in the ground?
You can get them before they get to Waitrose. Absolutely remarkable.
Goodness, it's just extraordinary. It's an eye-opener, totally. There's just this tree the birds sit on, and suddenly it's producing all these things that we can eat.
And then they went. Then they came back a year later.
They disappeared. But yeah, it was 100 apples that were at the top of the tree.
Yeah.
I can never get to. So with that, you know, aluminium, extendable, specific fruit picker, I got another 20 of them before I got.
That's absolutely incredible. It just looks like a great sport. Or leisure activity, picking your leisure apples. You've also bought the apple fruit pineapple peeler, a nice corer and slicer and dicer, like that. Very nice indeed.
Yeah, obviously connected.
Yeah. Nespresso compatible coffee capsules, not going for the official Nespresso brand, cheapskate. So
I know a bargain when I see one.
Not paying for the bloody name, just want a coffee. Gone for the oat drink here. Have you switched over to the old oat milk there?
Specifically, the barista editions of oat milk.
Why is that different? Does that mean you can whiz it up a bit and give it a bit of a cappuccino vibe?
Pretty much. Yeah, they're slightly creamier and maybe a tad sweeter than normal oat milk.
Ooh.
And so particularly with coffees, not so much with tea, and I still use normal milk in tea.
Yeah.
But certainly with coffees, it became the go-to thing. I still do.
I'm very interested. I'm very interested in the oat milk thing. I've had a couple and I quite like them, but I've never done them from home. I've never oated from home. There's no euphemism there, is
you,
there?
You oated yourself then.
I did oat myself.
Obviously.
Big time. Okay, good. So a special oat drink there if you want to go for the coffees Shay home. Sorry, I've been distracted by this chair. Fuck, look at this chair. The Neo Executive faux leather gaming computer desk office swivel reclining chair. The thing I don't like about Amazon at the moment is the way they put every single word in the English language before the product. So the number of times, it's causing me a real headache on this podcast because I have to read 98 words. A big office chair, £140. Tell me.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I mean, you need it, particularly given this last year where so much of, you know, the kind of work that we do when we're out and about has been at home. It was just that my previous chair was kind of quite uncomfortable. I occasionally get back twinges. So I wanted something that, you know, was super comfortable. Mm. And so not a chair for gaming for me, although that's one of the words that obviously they have to put in the description.
they put the word gaming on every single product on Amazon.
This is true, actually. Yeah, so. Gaming. Toaster. Gaming.
Exactly. Gaming oat milk. Pods. Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
So yeah, it was that. It was I thought, yes, I'm going to be sitting on this chair quite a bit and all have been for quite a bit now.
Yes.
I need something that's quite comfortable that I can lean back on a little bit. Yeah. Because also that you get sent a lot of, apart from scripts and things like that, you get sent links now to either documentaries or films that you have to watch. So occasionally I sit in on the Kermode and Mayo BBC film show.
Yes.
And a lot of those films that we have to review again, mainly over the last year, were streaming ones. And so I needed a chair that I could kind of lean back on. And
yeah, because you can't be a film critic unless you lean back like that. That's a very, film critic. You have to just.
No. Well, it's and theatre critic. It's kind of, it's the theatre critics, I think, is the lean in and arms folded.
Oh, God, don't you? Honestly, it's like me back at Edinburgh seeing that. Oh, that's horrifying.
It's the kind of impress me then.
Yeah.
It's that. You know,
it bloody is.
I think film critics just lean back. I mean, occasionally they're writing things down.
Well, that's the thing. Occasionally I've had it where they come in, they're writing things down, and then about halfway through my Edinburgh show, they'll put the thing they're writing notes on down and just give up and watch the rest of the show. You know,
I mean, does that, when you're doing a show like that, then once that's caught your eye and you go, oh, that's a critic, how do you keep the focus on the rest of the audience? Do you not just go back to that person the whole time?
Well, coming back weirdly to what we were talking about earlier on, that stubborn, contrary part of me loves it when that happens, because I'm like, well, fuck you. You obviously don't like this. Do you know what I mean? There's that sort of, Michael Jordan talks about it loads in that documentary where he would create a chip on his shoulder to make him work harder. And I would do the same thing. So I'd see a critic and think, he's not enjoyed this, she's not enjoyed this, they're just looking bored, it's not for them. Fine, it's for these guys instead. And that would make me better, strangely. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And did you then look at their review afterwards?
Oh, yeah, I can't help myself. To see whether... Yeah.
Well, neither can I. I end up reading everything. But did you then kind of look at that and go, oh, I think I'm... You know, either I misread their...
Yes. Yes, there's one specific occasion I can think of when I thought he hated it, and I got a really glowing 4-star review. And that was early on in my going to Edinburgh, doing solo shows experience, 10 years ago, in fact. And I... that was a very important lesson. I was like, right, stop doing that now. You've seen that happen with this one guy who looked like he hated it and he loved it. Now leave that alone. Put that down.
That's interesting.
Listen, right, we're getting towards the end of today's show, Sanjeev. And I feel like I know you so much better now. This is so great.
Probably too well.
Too well, yeah. You've got very clean ears and you haven't got a cat, but you've bought even more cat stuff, a cat scratching post. This is February 2021 now. I mean, this is all just preparing for the non-existent cat to come into your life, presumably.
It's best to be prepared.
Very good, very good. Bounce energy balls, which are, I'm going to put this out there, better than heroin. They may not want to use that as their official slogan, I don't know, but they're amazing, those things.
Yes, and probably not best injected.
No, the almonds really clog up the arteries. Yeah,
they really do. Yeah, just trying to get them in the bloody syringe to start with is just a pain. Yeah. You have to puree them. Anyway, it's a long drawn-out process, not worth the end result.
It's not.
I'll tell you why that was. I bought a couple of things on that day, I think. Of that kind of ilk.
Yes, you did. You bought loads. Yeah. You bought some Gray's Smoky Barbecue Crunch vegan savory snacks, some spicy spicy nut snack. Excuse me. This is the problem with all the words. It says hot party nibbles. Very hot party there. So you've gone, this is what's great about this order, Sanjeev, is that you've gone in on the protein. You've got energy balls, the vegan snacks, the spicy nut sacks, but then also you bought some amaretto syrup on the same
order.
Yes, I did.
No, I stand by all of those things.
Good.
So the reason was that I was filming a thing called Sandylands, which was a comedy on Gold, which I did 3 episodes of nearly 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were doing another 3 episodes, and it's got David Walliams in it and Sophie Thompson and Simon Bird, and really, really good fun to do. And Tracy Ann Oberman on this next series, which will come out in the next few months, I guess, was playing my ex-wife in it. And I knew I was going to be filming away for about a week and a bit. And the thing with filming away is that because you don't know what the hours are going to be until you get to that week, you can easily get stuck. I hate being in a hotel and then being limited to only ordering from the hotel menu.
Yeah.
And if you finish late as well, then it's just the kind of, the tomato soup and a sandwich or something that you can get at 11.
We're having the actor's whinge, by the way. I knew this would happen. We're doing the actor's whinge. Quite right, too.
I enjoy the challenge.
Yeah.
Well, I rose to the challenge, I feel, by pre-ordering a whole bunch of snacks that I could kind of take with me and if we were running late, I could dip into. So the energy bar type stuff, the nut sacks. Now I have to call them spicy nut sacks. spicy nut sacks. And the amaretto syrup is going back to the coffee.
Oh, of course.
That's for my sort of,
yes.
OT frothy coffee.
Just a bit more sugar in the coffee.
Good. Just a bit more because it's not really enough. It's that thing where you kind of go, they go, do you want sugar? Do you take sugar in your coffee again? No. And then you empty like kind of half a litre of sweetener, yeah. corn syrup into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't have sugar. No, no, no. But I'll have this. Here's the final thing, Sanjeev. And this feels like a perfect place to leave today's episode. In fact, you bought this only a week ago. But, you know, for all the things you've done in your incredible, illustrious career, which makes it sound past tense, definitely not past tense. But this might be become the most iconic part of your career. You've bought a travel laptop backpack, which looks identical to Sonny's backpack in Unforgotten. Does. Is that deliberate?
It was deliberate.
Yes.
And the backpack, Sonny's backpack in Unforgotten, really just started as, I went to the costume department where they, tell you their suggestions or the writers or the director's suggestions for outfits and things like that. And you've got some input at that point. Mm. And on the first series in 2015, they said to me, yes, and he has a bag and we've got this kind of shoulder bag. And then they said, oh, we've got this kind of briefcase thing that you can carry with you. And I said, actually, do you know what? The character's got kids. And so I think some kind of backpacky thing would be right, because it's kind of, it's practical. He could carry his kids' stuff in it. It's roomy enough to put police stuff in it. It's got pockets and, sections within it and stuff.
But it's quite formal. But it's black, isn't it? It's quite a formal backpack. It's not covered in sort of branding and logos and snazziness, is it?
No. It's plain black. Yeah. And it was kind of, well, yes, he would probably use that because he knows he can use it at work. And he knows that if he's taking his kids out on the weekend or whatever, he can pack the sandwiches and stuff into it as well.
Yes.
And so I said, I'd like the backpack and, plain one. That's great. And off we went. And it was only after the first series ended that, in the reviews and stuff and comments, people were going, what's with the backpack? What's it with the backpack? And also because I carry it over one shoulder. Yeah. He doesn't even wear it properly. And it was like, I'd kind of like, worn trousers, on my arms or something. It was kind of like, no, but that's the way I've always carried bags, because I've got one arm free then. And also, if it's on your shoulder, nobody can kind of nick something out of it. Whereas if it's on your back, they can unzip it and
also,
nick stuff.
I wonder if it's a generational thing, because anyone, certainly going to school in the 90s like I did, if you had your backpack on both shoulders, absolute nerd. Absolute nerd.
Well, do you know what? You're right. Because also, if you had your backpack on both shoulders, the chances of a kid coming back and yanking you backwards by your backpack were enormous. It was kind of like 97% at that time. It was like an invitation.
Like a parachute going up.
It was
gone.
And you'd have no control over it at that point. On the shoulder, on one hand,
there you go.
You're protecting yourself.
Yeah.
And then by the second series, when we started the second series, I thought it would be fun to get the costume department to fill it with stuff so it doesn't look empty in the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And that just built to me saying, well, look, surprise me with it. You can fill it with anything. We're not going to see it. So, and I'll open it at the end of the day and have a look at it, and it'll just be a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
And I then started to go increasingly overboard with what they put in it. And I would open it at the end of the day. I wouldn't look at it during the day at all. The end of the day, I'd take all the content out and take a picture. And then I started posting it as a fun thing. And it's just grown into this whole hashtag. and it is really, and in a way, maybe it's odd because the tone of the series is so serious. Serious things are happening in a serious world.
Yeah.
That this bit of fun, I don't know how it is viewed from the outside, whether it's, it makes us look, more rounded as human beings, or me trying to say, look, actually it is fun what we do. We take it very seriously, but, it's a laugh. Someone suggested actually quite accurately that it's a great indicator of a happy set.
Yes.
When your cast and crew can kind of mock each other slightly in that way.
Yes.
And be playful. And all those things I think are true.
Yes.
But I personally did not have a plain black backpack. And I thought, maybe I should just get one.
This is the time. I feel like this is a huge moment. Fans of Unforgotten will be whooping and cheering hearing this. I can see it in front of me. Sanjeev buying the official travel laptop backpack. I mean, maybe there's a merch opportunity here. That's just going to pop that in your head.
Thank you very much for copying. It's now in my head.
10%. Thank you very much.
That's yeah, 10%.
Who could have known? We talked earlier on about the surprises and never being scared of the future. Who could have known that you, when you were 32 years old, just before it all happened, eventually one day would be world famous for a hashtag about the contents of a fictional bag? Do you know what I mean? What
a joy. It feels fitting in some sort of way.
It tells us everything we need to know about this this silly job. Sanjeev, you are fantastic. And thank you so much for letting us have a look through your shopping list tree. It was stupid of you to let me do it, but it's been fantastic fun. Thank you so much.
It was utterly stupid of me, but thank you. It was really, really good fun.
Sanjeev Bhaskar. Sanjeev Bhaskar. Good morning. Oh, what a lovely man. And after we finished this, we talked and bitched about acting for ages. I was doing the bitching about self-taping. I decided not to keep it in because it was a private conversation. And also, it was very unedifying because it was just me complaining. Anyway, that is the end of another episode. So, bits of business for this week. First of all, I'm very excited about this. My mate bought a toaster, has been asked to go to Latitude. I know. So we're going to be doing a live version of the show at Latitude. The date is the 24th of July. So if you are going to Latitude, aka Latitude, hilariously as it's retitled many years ago, if you're going to Latitude and you're not doing anything on the Saturday the 24th, then do come down and say hi. I'd love to see you there because I still don't believe we've got any listeners. The numbers tell me we have, but I find it incredible. I'm incredulous that people listen to this nonsense. Anyway, we're going to do it live. No idea who the guest is yet. I've got a clue. I haven't thought about anything yet, but it'll be someone brilliant. And I will let you know who that is over the coming weeks. So if you're coming to Latitude, then please come and watch us do My Mate Bought a Toaster live. That's that bit of intel. Next week, Sean Welby is on. She's a fantastic radio host. She's really funny. That is a great episode. And then, oh, I'm very excited about this. Reverend Richard Coles is going to be coming on. And I've already recorded it. And I'm totally in love with Reverend Richard Coles. And who isn't? If you're not, listen to the episode in a couple of weeks and you will be. I'm going to edit that and stick that out on Patreon very, very soon as well. So you can get it exclusively early and ad-free there. There you go. Quite enough of this podcast. Come on, we've gone on for over an hour here. This is unacceptable. I will let you get on with your days and listen to other things and do other things with your life. See you soon now. Bye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
If you'll subscribe to our podcast.
You know, it's all about how to get the most out of your partner.
And we're partners.
So we know all about it.
It's good. Get it wherever you want to get it, when you go and get it from your podcast, please. Richard and Greta.
You know.
You know?